Oh, did I let him in first?
It doesn't matter. You can have it all at the same time. Just go ahead and come out of closed session.
Okay, so we are coming out of closed session for the special meeting on August 13th. There was no reportable action.
Correct.
I know, you almost got me.
And now we're going to open the... Yeah.
We are now opening the regular meeting.
Georgetown. Yeah, let me get them.
I don't think anybody heard you, Dan.
Welcome. Opening the public meeting. Good afternoon, everyone. So what?
I got more wood. Okay. I didn't speak to you about this.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All oak, and you're welcome to all you can eat.
I've been out of town a little bit, so I'll come back.
There's no rush.
Probably tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no rush, and you're welcome to.
The beauty is I got a splitter from my neighbor. He's like, just use it for free as long as you want. So I've been splitting all that stuff that I got.
Oh,
that's all split. So it's... right along, so I'll be back.
I'm delighted to see you doing good news.
Trust
August
me,
thank you.
I really appreciate you.
Oh, this is
I can't
131.
Otherwise. I was going to, okay,
this
okay,
is
I was
the
going
board
to
meeting.
Pay someone
this
to take
the board meeting.
Which was,
I mean, this is a special meeting. I just wanted to see what they were
so,
talking about.
The fact that you can put it to use,
there was
yay. Did I tell you I bought an electric chainsaw?
Electric?
I'm telling you, I'm
is this
amazed.
On the power?
Amazed and dazzled.
I have electric. It's a little electric chainsaw. I use it downtown. It's kind of cute. It's good for little limbs.
I take it on my horse. I put it in the back of my
head.
You know, it doesn't upset my horse. I just set it aside. I go to work.
Yeah,
I'm
on the trail,
so
I'm a
big
fan.
Yeah, it's
a host
thing.
It's
not bad.
It's
not like
a big
fan.
Oh, where's Christina sitting?
You know what? She can sit in here for a little bit too, huh? Last time I had to do another chair.
It's light, it's really easy to handle.
And it has a lot of energy. I bought two batteries, you know, the Fat Boy batteries. You're amazing.
So you almost drunk her?
Yeah, the two batteries out last week.
It's like an electric hedger, you know, electric hedger.
I always thought of like the string trimmers, but I was like, they're not the same, so that's why I never bought a electric one. You want to put it in the house, and then the
engine's
in
the house.
We even have a chainsaw before.
Looking at it.
This one has a constant speed, which is very good for the battery.
Yeah.
No spiking.
Yeah. Does this go in a whole different...
Did you get her?
It's like a headphone.
Does this go in a whole different folder, or do I just press record again?
I just press record. It's still recording now.
Now I'm curious. The regular meeting of the Georgetown Divide Public Utility District, August 13th, 2 p.m. Well, actually, we got to do a roll call first, please. Stephanie.
Director Garcia?
Here.
Director Halpin?
Here.
Director Saunders?
Here.
Director Souza?
Here.
Director Waddle?
Wadley.
Here. Sorry.
That's okay. Okay, Pledge of Allegiance. Dave, you lead us, please.
Sure.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Adoption of the agenda. Consider a motion to adopt the agenda, please.
Make a motion.
I do want to, item 5A1 should not be in the agenda, so I want to hold that off. Staff requests, you guys approved those last time. And so the ones that are in here are actually wrong, they're a little draft copy. So we miscommunicated. So 5A1, just take it off the poll.
So, Rick, that's okay with you, with your motion?
That's fine.
Okay.
Issue with one of the motion of the agenda items.
Okay.
7E. So I think it's great that we're doing that, but the problem I can see in the future is if we have adopted some of these policies, it might also be good to have them individually listed as adoption of board president duties, blah, 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 instead of all lumped together, because it may be difficult to find it afterwards. A certain resolution, so we can still have this, but have them listed separately as well.
Can you talk louder? Yeah, we can't hear you.
So the CSDA special transparency certificate lists all the policies together as one. And I'm requesting if we can also have each policy listed separate as a different adoption resolution, just so for future, if we wanted to revise one, it's not all lumped together as one package.
Yeah, so when you come up with this item, you can just address each one of them separately with a different resolution to adopt.
And more sharing and everything else.
Yeah. But you don't need to change the agenda or anything to do that.
Okay. So looking for a second on the motion to adopt the agenda. Okay. Roll call, Stephanie, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, who was the first motion? You were the first, and then you adopted it with no changes or anything? Okay.
Well, no, it was 5A1.
Just 5A1, but not for... Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. Director Souza?
Aye.
Director Saunders?
Aye.
Director Halpin?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Director Wadley?
Aye. Okay, item three, public forum items. Only for items that are not on the agenda, there will be public comment for every other agenda item as there normally is. Anyone has public comment, please? Carolyn, go ahead.
Carolyn O'Connor from Georgetown. There was talk several months ago of an engineering report being brought forward so that the audit could take place. That's one of the reasons why so many that voted for the two new board members wanted done. I want to know what's happened. Where is it? The months are going by. I don't know if somebody's dragging their feet, but it needs to be done.
Okay, thank you. Other public comments?
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Phyllis Polito. I'm from Garden Valley. Although Director Waddle's President's Report in the August 8th...
Wadley.
Wadley.
You always get it right.
Okay. Wadley's President Report, excuse me. In the August 8th Georgetown Gazette was well written. It lacked honesty. Director Wadley did a good job of clouding the issue and skirting the facts, claiming that he does his best to balance the interests of the public and fellow board members is an insult to the community. Mr. Wadley, in your article, you say that public input is welcome, but your actions speak louder than words. You, along with the general manager, not only ignore input of the public and other board members, but you discourage it and actively work to suppress it. In the last election, the voters spoke very clearly and ousted the board members that were not responsive to the community and elected two board members who promised to bring honesty, transparency, and change to the way business has been conducted in the district. What Director Wadley and the general manager are doing is preventing discussion from taking place by refusing to put items that are of deep concern to the public on the agenda. Directors Garcia and Saunders hold town hall meetings and listen carefully to public concerns. I've attended a few and I've heard ratepayers often ask to have items discussed at board meetings. Directors Garcia and Saunders repeatedly tell us that they will submit these items for future board meetings, yet Director Wadley and the general manager refuse to place them on the agenda. Thus, the board cannot work together to govern. An example of items that have been submitted for board discussion is the revised irrigation ordinance. Despite the fact that there have been four public workshops that have taken place over almost 2 years, the general manager has failed to complete the report and bring it to the board. Another item that needs to be placed on the agenda for policy direction is the role of the financial committee and how financial decisions are made. Another example of great concern to the community is discussion of written policy to get items on the agenda. The board president should not have more power than any of the other four members of the board. They should be equal players. Yet, by refusing to put matters of grave importance on the agenda, the board president is single-handedly controlling the direction of the board. By not allowing these items to even be discussed, Director Wadley is either shirking his responsibilities as board president or intentionally sabotaging the efforts of Directors Garcia and Saunders to be able to participate in governing our district. This is going to cause the board to fail because they cannot do their job if they're prevented from discussing items. There are direct consequences of the board. These are direct consequences of the board president's lack of leadership. Director Wadley's actions show disregard not only for fellow board members, but also for the people that he's entrusted to represent. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Anyone else? Cherie.
This was an article that was in the Mountain Democrat a couple weeks ago. So what I want to reference here is all of the grants that EID is supposedly getting. They're getting $1.9 million for three CAL FIRE grants to treat their facilities to reduce the threat of wildfire. On the second page, they're getting another grant to address the possibility of installing more generators. They found out that they need 22 generators, and they applied and completed an application for $1.8 million for a FEMA grant, and they're hoping to get that next year. So my question to the board is, I think you need to appoint a grant committee so people can actually research this so the staff doesn't have to do it, and because I think we're wasting a lot of money by not getting these grants, because EID's getting them. And then also, this is a very good article about the fire protection, which I think 7D is supposed to be about coming up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else? Public comment? Once?
I'm going to go get
twice.
Stamp.
Okay. Thank you. Number four, proclamations and presentation. Steve, emergency preparedness presentation.
Yeah, in response to a couple of comments from board members about, especially Director Saunders, the champion of this, talking about emergency preparedness and disaster information. I invited CAL FIRE to come give us a little talk about emergency response and incident management. And they're still outside, so let me go get them.
Okay.
You should just be able to open up the window, Steve. I had it on earlier, unless it times off. Unless, of course, it might have timed off and shut itself down.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Are you ready for us to turn the lights on?
Sure. Can we get one of them back on, actually? Maybe the one in the back?
Or open the
door.
Open the door.
One or all.
And there are there are handouts up here. If anybody wants.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. So first of all, so good afternoon. My name is Mike Blankenheim. I work for CAL FIRE, obviously. Just a little bit about my job and where I'm coming from, and then I'll introduce Todd Crawford here in a second. But I'm the division chief for CAL FIRE in charge of the operations in El Dorado County. So I've got the CAL FIRE operations on the west slope of El Dorado County. We have another division chief that handles the Tahoe Basin.
but this side is mine. My office is in Growlersburg Camp, just down the road there, so I also oversee Growlersburg Camp and the operations out of there as well. In the job now for probably 3 or 4 months, 4 or 5 months or something along those lines, I replaced a guy named Mike Webb, who some of you may know, and Mike's been in that job for a long time and left an outstanding program for me to kind of come into. So as I'm kind of learning the ropes here and get my feet on the ground and that kind of thing, I'm not from El Dorado County, so I'm still learning some of the players and some of the organizations and the politics and some of those kind of things. So one of the other fortunate things I have going for me is a partner like Todd Crawford. He's from the El Dorado County Sheriff's Office, and he is their OES representative. So Todd and I have done a whole bunch of presentations together. Now we've done probably, I don't know, quite a few of these. So anyway, what we're going to talk about today a little bit, I talked to Mr. Palmer last week or a week or two ago, talking about coming and doing a presentation for the board here on incident management, emergency operations, and what the role for the Georgetown Public Utilities District might be in that. So so we've got a presentation here. We'll cover a few things, and then but if we're not getting to what you guys really want to know, if we're not getting out the right information, if you have specific questions about certain things or whatever, please feel free to just stop us and ask the question that you want to hear about. So, and then we'll see if the presentation meets the mark or not. So can we advance the slides there? So some things that I thought we would be good to discuss. Sorry.
I'll just do this.
So it's a couple things that we could talk about today. So the incident command system, which is ICS, which is pretty much universal for the emergency services in the United States right now. We'll talk about some of the planning process and when there is an incident happen, when we do have an emergency, how we go through identifying the emergency and then planning the operations and that kind of thing. We'll show how that kind of works and where the utility district might fit into that process. We'll talk about jurisdictions and then some responsibilities that go along with having jurisdictions in certain areas. And then the second part here is going to be more of Todd's thing. We'll talk about the EOC if we do open one in the county down in Placerville, or if we want to open up a specific department operations center that would be specific to the utility district here. And Todd can talk about some ways we could or would do both of those things. We'll talk about standard emergency management system and the national incident management system. And then if we need to after we're done here, maybe some further training opportunities that we could look at that might be beneficial for you guys. Okay, so the incident command system. It was developed in the 1970s in California by a group called FireScope. And it's gone through a couple different iterations, but that version that they built in the early 70s is pretty much the same incident command system that we use today. Started in California. It's pretty much been adopted nationwide, especially in California. Law enforcement is really starting to get on board with it and has been for a while now, and it's catching on across the country. And what it does, it allows for us a system that can expand or contract as incident needs dictates. We can use the incident command system all the way from like a minor vehicle accident where we have one engine and a chief officer there, all the way up to something like the King Fire that came through here 4 or 5 years ago where we had 2,000 or 3,000 responders and an incident that won for a whole month. So The incident command system allows us to efficiently manage any kind of an incident, really. Allows for span of control and a very clear chain of command and unity of command. That just means that everybody working on that incident knows who they're working for, and everybody that has subordinates under them, it's built where a person that's supervising doesn't get overwhelmed with the number of people working for them. So as a person in charge of something gets more than 7 or 8 people working for them, we expand the organization out further, so we break that up a little bit so we're not overwhelming supervisors in any one particular area. And like we talked about there, it can be used to manage any type of emergency or a planned event. It's good for emergency incident management, but in our department, we also use it to organize public events. We use it to organize like the Summer Spectacular in Cameron Park every year. We put together a command structure and plan it out using the incident command system. So it can be used for a lot of different things, and it standardizes process and terminologies across agencies. I think we've already kind of touched on that there. Core functions of ICS. So there's two real functions in ICS. There's a command function, and then there's the general staff function. And the command function is the person or the agency that is going to be in charge of whatever incident that we're talking about handling. And with that, when they're in charge of that, that also means that they have usually statutory responsibility, so they have jurisdiction. And the big one is they're usually financially responsible for whatever incident mitigation is going to need to take place. So the incident commander almost always works for or represents the agency that is going to end up paying probably a good chunk of the bill for that incident. The agency administrator is actually the person that the incident commander works for. So like a wildland fire example in El Dorado County here. A wildland fire down the road in Georgetown, for instance. So it would be a CAL FIRE incident commander because that's SRA. And the agency administrator that we would be working for in that case would probably be the unit chief of the unit. It's CAL FIRE responsibility, so we would handle it ourselves. That same fire up on the forest, it may be a CAL FIRE incident commander, but in that particular instance, the U.S. Forest Service would be the agency administrator because it would be their land, their jurisdiction responsibility. They get to set some of the priorities on how that goes. So in NICS, the people that work for the incident commander, directly for the incident commander, the safety officer, the public information officer, and the liaison officer. I want to touch on the liaison officer a little bit here because this is kind of getting to an area where you guys in the utility district might actually start coming into play with the setup here. So the job of the liaison officer is to be the eyes and the ears of the incident commander, really. He is the one that's out front meeting with cooperators, meeting with stakeholders and that kind of thing, and taking in inputs, taking in concerns, taking in all those things, relaying those up into the incident command system to the IC, and then also getting information back out to the cooperators. The way we do that is with an agency representative. Anytime we have an incident that affects multiple agencies, which if we're going to use wildland fire, as the example, most wildland fires affect many different agencies. So we want to bring in agency representatives that can represent their agency, obviously, but that have some ability to speak for and make decisions on behalf of the agency they're representing. So when they come to the incident on behalf of the Georgetown Public Utility, for instance, they could make decisions on operations that would affect the Georgetown Public Utility District. That way that the person that we have speaking at the incident has some authority, and when they say something or ask for something or give direction to do something, we know that they're actually representing the district and what in their work holds.
So that AREP also it doesn't have to be someone at the top rank. Okay, this is a person, like Mike was saying, that can represent that agency, knows their agency in and out on the capabilities, resources available, has that authority to act for that agency and spend their money. The same thing is when we ask an AREP to come into the Emergency Operations Center. We want that person. There's going to be things that could happen that are time sensitive, and we're going to reach to that AREP, and we want that person to be able to make a decision fairly quick, not making calls to higher-ups, looking for an answer. So that's kind of what we're looking for with
Okay, so then the other part of the incident command structure, you have the command side of things we just talked about, and this is kind of where the rubber meets the road. These are the people that are, for the most part, handling, actually mitigating the operations. So there's an operations section, and we've got on there, they're the doers. The incident command system that's built on the incident is built around the operations section. The operations section is tasked with actually physically mitigating whatever we're there to mitigate, whether it be a wildland fire, a flood, a car accident, whatever. The operations section is there to actually take care of mitigating the emergency. So the other three functions on here are built around supporting the operations section. The plan section, we got in there, they're the thinkers. The plan section track all the resources. They build the maps. They gather the intelligence. They write the reports. They actually publish the IAP, which is the Incident Action Plan, which is the document we use that dictates how we're going to operate on a daily basis. So the plans function takes care of all the intelligence and all that kind of thing. Logistics is exactly what it is. Logistics is there to support both, mainly support the incident itself, support the responders on the incident. They're the ones that take care of ordering everything for us. They take care of getting food, fire engines, hose, portable toilets, and so on and so on and so on. So just name it there. They get stuff. And then finance, they're the ones that pay for everything. They're supposed to be the financial experts. They know contracts and pay documents and purchasing rules for different organizations and all of those kind of things. So So this is what we call the general staff. So these people all work for the IC as well. They report directly to the IC.
And Mike, before you go on, can I ask you a question?
Yep.
First of all, can I have you say your last name again? I'm sorry, I didn't want
to call
you Mike by your first name. That's the first one.
It's a long last name, Blankenheim.
Blankenheim. On this, where do you see any of our GPUD staff fitting in? Do you need doers, not here primarily.
So back to that previous slide, we talked about agency representative.
So you don't need additional staff here?
No.
Like Stephanie or somebody that helps
with
our finances?
Yeah, and we'll get into this a little bit more when we start talking about your department operations center, where you have something in here where those things are going to come to play with you guys.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you.
So something on here where you guys may fit in, you go back to the agency representative role. If there was a wildland fire that was going to really impact your water supply or your ditch system or those kind of things, we as the firefighting agency don't always understand the impacts and how to mitigate some of those things and that kind of thing. So we would want somebody like Daryl there that can explain to us, hey, if the fire burns through here, we're going to have X, Y, and Z impacted. Here's what we'd like to see happen with it. If you could do this, if you could do this. We want to hear those things because we don't always know those things. So that's your input into the incident through the liaison, which would kind of come full circle back to the operations section chief, and hopefully we can honor what you guys would want to do. So the more we've kind of talked this through, the more I think that's probably going to be the interaction between GPUD and an incident management organization, especially if it was a wildland fire. If it was something different like a structure fire,
like at our water treatment plant.
So if that's going to be still fire.
Because again, these positions are more on knowledge and experience. And we would use you folks, your operations people, as a technical specialist to gather information about your system, about the building, what chemicals are on site, that kind of stuff, and provide that information.
Thank you.
Yep, so when we fill these positions, let me back up a little bit. So for the larger scale incidents, if you want to use like the King Fire as an example as what a large scale incident really is, we bring in incident management teams, and these people all come together with the team, so they work together, train together, all that kind of thing. So the team shows up as a whole, so they're ready to go with all these functions filled.
Thank you.
And that's where we're looking for the AREPs that we don't have, obviously. So that's where we're looking to bring those cooperating agencies, people with expertise, into our organization. Okay, so a little bit about the planning process. So first of all, incident assessment and information gathering, that's kind of the very initial stages, is trying to figure out what exactly the incident is, what the emergency entails, gathering as much information, as intelligence as humanly possible. Once we've got kind of an idea of what's occurring, we establish objectives, meaning that we want to put a plan together. If we're going to put a plan together, we've got to have an end state in mind. So we're going to put some objectives out there that we want to do on this particular incident. We want to accomplish A, B, C, and D. Get that established up front. So everybody's got a common set of goals to work towards as we go through the rest of the planning process. So we identify ways in which we want to mitigate the emergency. Then we go back to the staffing there, the plan section. They develop the incident action plan, which takes that set of objectives and starts putting it into a working document on, okay, if we want to, as an objective, if we want to keep the fire, say, north of Highway 49. That would be an objective that we would put out there. The IEP would give us some specifics on how we're going to accomplish that. We're going to put a division here. We're going to put X number of resources here. We're going to build fire line here. It would kind of give us the specifics on how we're going to accomplish the objective set forth. And then communicating the plan. I can't stress this one enough. We have on an established organization, we've got a pretty tight meeting schedule where the same meetings happen at the same time in the same location every day while the incident's going on. And a couple of big ones, especially for us, are the planning meeting, which happens usually in the evening time, which is we validate the plan for the next operational period, which is usually the next day, but sometimes it can be two op periods in one day, but usually for us, they're once a day. And then the operations briefing, which is first thing in the morning, which is where all the people that are actually going to go out in the field and be doing work on the incident come to the incident base and get briefed on what their job exactly is for the day and who they're going to be working with and what radio frequencies they're going to be speaking on and those kind of things. The big one for you guys, I think, is going to be the cooperators meeting. The cooperators meeting is where all the different affected stakeholders meet with the liaison, and it's usually right after the operational briefing. And it's not the only forum, but that's a good open forum for everybody in the same room together to express agency concerns, considerations, those kind of things to the liaison. and then that usually gets communicated back into the rest of the incident management organization. If all things go well, the liaison will be hosting and facilitating the cooperators meeting, but there'll also be representatives from all the other sections in the organization. So there'll be somebody to represent the operations section there, somebody to represent the finance section there, somebody to represent logistics. So you'll have members of the incident management structure there at the cooperators meeting. So depending on what your concern may be, hopefully we've got the right person there to hear your concern and hopefully work on addressing it in some way, shape, or form. So again, the cooperators meeting is where I would see probably the most of the interaction between, like I said, the utility district like yourselves and an incident management structure. And then lastly, execute, evaluate, and adapt the plan as necessary. All right, so jurisdictions and responsibilities. So like we kind of talked about a little bit before with the person having the incident commander role, it's usually somebody from the agency having statutory and almost always financial responsibility. It's generally the person or the agency that's going to be in charge. And going back to, again, to GPUD, I really couldn't think of one where you guys would have the jurisdictional responsibility to mitigate an emergency. And if you guys are seeing something different, I would love to hear. If there's something I'm not thinking about, please let's get that out there right now. Because I have not thought of one, but I have not thought of an incident where you guys would be statutorily obligated to financially take care of whatever incident it may be. And I said, if maybe we can talk through a little bit if you guys have other ideas on that. But most of the things that I could think of, a wildland fire is either going to be Cal Fire or the U.S. Forest Service, kind of depending on where it's at. We talk about earthquakes and those kind of things. Those are going to be OES and law enforcement. Hazmat would be law enforcement.
It depends on whether or not you own, and I don't know, some of the water, the lake. So depends if you have ownership of that and who actually owns it. Do you just have the water rights, that type of thing?
The only incident that I brought it up with the state already is because they don't have an answer, is a drought which is related to people in our district that are on wells that lose water. Who's responsible for that? There's no answer for that.
Yeah, and then the state's gotten some good practice on that recently. We didn't have that issue in our county at all. But that's something that could happen, of course. So.
And then, back to some typical different responsibilities. So, state responsibility, any wildland fire on public lands in El Dorado County, non-federal private lands in El Dorado County are going to be the responsibility of the state of Cal Fire. All the federal lands are the responsibility of one of the forest agencies, usually the U.S. Forest Service or BLM are the two big landowners in El Dorado County. And then local responsibility, which would be the responsibility of some local agency. For the most part, if we're going to talk like on the fire side of things, like a structure fire or a vehicle accident or something like that, on Main Street in Georgetown is going to be the local responsibility of the Georgetown Fire Department, or something in Garden Valley like a structure fire, that same kind of thing would be the responsibility of the Garden Valley Fire Department. That doesn't mean that agencies don't assist each other all the time and respond to each other's calls and work out mutual aid and auto aid agreements and all those kind of things, but when it comes down to it, there's almost always a single entity that has the jurisdictional and financial responsibility to take care of whatever emergency there is out there. So then the last thing on here, and this can be super complicated or not, kind of depending on different situations. The unified command versus single command. So a single command for me would be like a wildland fire somewhere down Highway 193 that's on private land. That would be Cal Fire's responsibility. It's not impacting the federal lands. It's not impacting a local fire district. That's Cal Fire's responsibility to take care of that, both statutorily and financially. So we are not going to enter into unified command on that. We are going to be the incident commander of that incident. We're going to make the operational decisions, and we're going to pay for it and all those kind of things. Unified command could be when an incident is going to affect two or more agencies. And when that happens, we try to bring in incident commanders from the various agencies who come together, work together, and they can sit at a table together, express their individual concerns for their individual agencies. And with that, it is their obligation, their responsibility to come up with a single set of objectives. Like we talked about in a few slides ago, one of the first things we do is evaluate the incident, come up with some objectives. So the main function of the unified incident commanders as a group is to come up with a set of objectives that will satisfy the requirements, the needs for all the different agencies that have financial or jurisdictional impact on that incident. And from that common set of objectives, that's given to the operations section chief, and the operations section chief has one IEP and all that kind of thing. So the only place that unified command is, where there's multiple players at the table, is at the incident command level. And once they get those objectives built and established, then they go out for the operations section chief to execute those objectives. So the two things you need to have to come into unified command is, one is some kind of jurisdictional responsibility. And the big one that scares people away from it sometimes, or a lot of times, is you have to bring the checkbook to the table with you. You have to be willing to pony up something to get in the game. If y'all don't have the right analogies or not, but if you're going to sit at the table and participate in the unified command process and create objectives and that kind of thing, you've got to be able to offer something from your agency, whether it be money or resources. Smaller agencies, a lot of times, it's just offering up what resources they have available. If there was a fire impacting the Georgetown Fire District down there, we know Georgetown Fire District doesn't have a huge budget. They're not going to pay for a lot of resources. What we would ask them to do if they want to be in the unified command thing is offer up everything they can as far as resources, meaning that we would probably be using their water tenders and some of their people and that kind of thing, and Georgetown would pay for that themselves, and that would be their ante, I guess, into the game.
And Mike, does FireScope allow single to merge into unified?
Absolutely.
If you have something that moves into
federal land.
Because of that.
So the prime example of what exactly you're talking about is a Santa Ana fire, like in Southern California, where every 3 miles on the freeway there's a new city or a new community with a new fire chief, and a Santa Ana fire can go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 miles in a day. You're going to burn through a couple different jurisdictions in a single burn period. So yeah, so in the morning time it might be Riverside County and the city of Anaheim, and by the afternoon it's the city of Anaheim and the city of Long Beach. So you know, it can change. You can come in and out of it as whatever's happening is either moving into or moving out of whatever jurisdiction you may have. Great question, but yes. Okay, so the EOC, and I think I'm going to let Todd speak to this, because I think he's got a little bit more understanding of this than I do.
So I'm going to stand over here so I don't block anyone, but I'm going to be behind you now. So, but Emergency Operations Center is, you'll hear it referred to as the EOC, is where multiple disciplines come together to help support and back up an incident commander. Any incident commander in the county can ask for the EOC to open up and help support them with the incident. So on a wildland fire, we can open up the Emergency Operations Center in three levels. One level being at the very minimum, it might need a couple of us in there, keeping good situational awareness on what the fire's doing, maybe where it's going, starting to think ahead on anticipated issues or problems, all the way up to a full room, multiple disciplines, having a law branch, a fire branch, having the utility districts in there to say, keep the water coming, keep the pressure up type thing. But we're not there to do tactical stuff. We're there to support, okay? We don't make decisions for the incident commander, but we help them with doing stuff, thinking ahead. They're gonna be busy, you know, figuring out how to mitigate the issue, whatever it may be, and that EOC is there to think about the what ifs. Start thinking downrange. In the EOC, one of our functions also is already starting to think about recovery phase. How are we going to recover from this? Let's get the recovery going and started. So that's one of our main functions also is the coordination. Okay, we're going to be coordinating with all of the entities that the incident is touching and affecting, and we're going to be reporting to the state. It may be asking for more resources, and for that we have to justify them and ask them exactly what we need and go through our mutual aid systems and try to get that support in to help with our emergency. So that's, you know, pretty much the function of it. Again, like Mike was saying, even with EID and SMUD, those utility districts come in to represent that utility, provide either technical information about the system and the water shed and supplying water. During the Angora fire in 07, stupid South Tahoe Public Utility District. Basically, that's what they were told. I know, everyone laughs at stupid.
That's right.
But that was the main thing that we told them was keep the, you know, because they had all the tanks, so they had to keep filling the tanks to keep the pressure up in the system. And that was the main thing, keep that water filled and keep that pressure up for water for firefighting efforts. So that was their main focus. The fire didn't impact any of their infrastructure, so that solely was their purpose there. So that's kind of where the Emergency Operations Center is. Again, that's a multi-discipline room where a department operations center, like you guys would have here, where something happened with your infrastructure and impacted the supply of water, you folks could open up this room as your department operations center, single discipline, and work on the problem. And with the DOC, you guys are doing operational, tactical stuff to fix the problem and directing your staff. On a law enforcement function, if it was just affecting law enforcement, we would open up the Sheriff's Department, a DOC, and help direct just the law assets for that problem. But when it's an incident that affects multi-disciplines, then it's going to be transitioned into an EOC. Okay? Thank you. So, again, you know, how anything gets fixed, someone important... house got damaged. Senator Petras's house in Oakland Hills fire burned down. Okay, so in 94, the state passed the standardized emergency management system because even at that time, things weren't standardized all over the place. So San Francisco had never come out of the city to help fight a fire. So when they came over to Oakland, they found that San Francisco's hoses didn't fit Oakland's hydrants, okay? Their radios couldn't talk to each other. So because of this, Senator Petras did this bill. I can't remember the bill number. I used to. But it basically standardized how we do emergency management, standardized some of the resources that we do, comes up with the coordination, mutual aid system, and the operational area concept. The operational area concept is just the county. The county is the operational area. We report to a region, and then that region reports to the state as a whole. But when someone, you know, having the two cities in our county, when Southlake or Placerville needs resources, they come to the county first. They look for local resources. Doesn't mean we have to deplete everything, but we have to give them what we have, and we can hold some in reserve. But once we get to that level where we want to go elsewhere and get more resources, then we go to the region. So there's systems in place with coordination, communication, resources, you know, to handle any type of emergency, like Mike was saying earlier. So it is a good system. It is so good that the feds took this system, manipulated it, and now call it NIMS. So you can switch.
What year was this?
This was 94 when SIMS was brought into act. So after that, again, because California, everyone copies some stuff with California. but because of our emergency responses so well, and, you know, we've done good things with it. The feds went ahead and copied the system. They tweaked some things so they could call it their own, which is National Incident Management System. But basically, if you're following SIMS, which as a community service district, you guys are obligated and required to, per government code, you actually follow NIMS also. Okay, so when you follow these practices, you are in compliance with NIMS and SIMS. Okay. Again, NIMS, it's all about preparedness. We want to make sure that we're prepared for the emergencies, and that's knowing what hazards you have in your community. So doing a thorough hazard analysis for your community, knowing what can impact you. A lot of people in Tahoe didn't know that a tsunami, or what they call a siege, could affect the Tahoe Basin. Okay, so that was one of the things that we had to plan for the Tahoe Basin. That communication coordination through our PIO group, We have joint information system, which can actually open up what they call a JIC, the Joint Information Center, where if we have a big incident like the King Fire, we can bring in all of the PIOs, public information officers, together, and that's all they do is they do the press releases and all the public information that they release with the approval of the incident commander and push out that information. NIMS, again, handles the resource management, command and management like ICS, and again, it talks about, you know, the ongoing management and maintenance of the system. So like right now, I'm actually reviewing and updating the county's emergency operation plan. So every 5 years, we're mandated to go through there if we haven't done it sooner, and updating that plan. So right now, that's what we're doing. So, good. And then, you know, this is a good start, but for you folks, you should really, at the basic level, be looking at going on to FEMA online training, their independent study courses, and taking the IS 700 and 100. 700 is about NIMS, and 100 is about ICS, the Incident Command System. And, you know, when you guys are asked to be brought into the EOC, we follow the Incident Command System out in the field and in the EOC. So you need to have a basic understanding of that chain of command and unity of command, because that's how we operate in there, and what functions do what, and what functions interact, you know, you need to know. You do something on the operational side, that's going to affect the plan side and the logistical side most of the times. And then later on, you know, stepping up, doing the IS 800 and then IS 200, which is the next level of incident command system. And then when you get into ICS 300 and 400, that's talking about, you know, pretty much doing EOC operations. Those other courses, the G191, G775, we can go ahead and teach those from the county, or if you guys want, you can go to, you know, outside the area and take the courses through CSTI. So they offer them all the time. One of the other things, once you guys get some training on board, look at doing tabletop exercises and coming up with some of those issues that you may have and talk them through using ICS and opening up your Department Operations Center and talking through those, because what you're going to find is that is a good mechanism to exercise your plans that you have already. And you're going to find that there's probably some areas in that plan that need to be tweaked because they don't exactly work the way you wanted it to. So that's how we do it a lot. Once you do table talks, then you can actually get into a full functional exercise of putting people and equipment and moving them around out there. So, okay. That's about all we have for the presentation. We are very open to questions or comments, and
we're getting old.
Your questions for the board?
Actually, I got a couple. What, if anything, do you need? And Steve, this might be more of a question for you. What, if anything,
Nope.
Here.
Close to you. You had it. That's it.
There you go. Right when I got there.
Sorry.
It's right there.
Let me ask it this way. What overlap, Mike and Todd, do you need from our district or our district staff that to make this connection work and work well in case you need a liaison from us or in case we need to employ some of your services for anything?
So what I keep handy is all the main contacts. So once you guys identify agency reps, okay, that fit the needs that we were talking about, we need like two or three deep, okay, and we need the contact information, because how we operate is when an incident happens, it starts small and starts growing. Mike could be out at the scene as the incident commander. He could request that the EOC open up, and then we're going to look at who's involved in this, who's it affecting, what issues we may have. And that's when we pick up the phone and start calling those agencies and say, hey, we need your representation in the EOC to represent your agency or district. So those contact lists with those identified personnel that have authority for GPUD and can spend your money.
Again, for us, this is a great first step to actually come in here and actually opening up the conversation and that kind of thing. So this is a great first step.
I've been doing OES in this county for 20 years, and luckily, you guys haven't been needed. So,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, so it is a good thing.
Yep.
That's a good thing. And then, Steve, a follow-up question then for you would be, imagine that you've probably already been in contact and probably already provided information that's needed. So are you working on that, or is there any direction that you're looking to from the board for any more emergency preparedness or any, you know, response issues?
No, there's nothing that we need at this point from the board. I mean, we have our own emergency action plans, emergency response plans. The good thing about this is now we're coordinating a tabletop exercise. Daryl's been in touch with Todd, I believe, and Mike about helping us establish our own tabletop exercise we can run. So at this point.
So what I do suggest is once those folks are identified is check out what the level of training is in the incident command system. I'll be very blunt. People can take that online training and it really doesn't sink in until you start doing some stuff. We can, you know, help you with those trainings, put it in, you know, water district terms and issues and start working out the problem. I just did it for Motherlode School District. And we did school type of issues and broke it down and kind of walked it through the problems with the functional positions out there. And then that's when it really starts to hit home. It's the same thing with the deputies. When I do the training with them, those terms I used up, those are my deputy terms. Mm-hmm. The, you know, doers, the getters, the payers, okay, because I have to break it down. Because they don't realize they do those things already, but they're not thinking in ICS terms and how those functions interact with the other functions on a lot of their decisions.
Great. Well, thank you for coming because I think it's important for not only board members, but the community to hear that we're addressing this issue. And it would be nice to know for your standpoint, if you know where our resources are and where our pumps are, where our generators are, and we know where they are too, and if they're maintained and how they could be used and where they could be deployed to and things like that. So it's great that we're starting this. And doing
no, for sure. I've got Daryl's phone number now. Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for your time. Right,
thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve, for bringing
me
in.
Great. Right. Moving right along, item 5, consent calendar. So I assume some are going to be polled. So who wants to poll the first one?
I have 5E.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, very good. So then we'll take entertain a motion on the balance of the consent calendar, which is items 5A, 2, 5B, 5C, and 5D, please.
I'll make a motion. We accept it.
Second.
Okay. Stephanie, roll call when you're ready, please.
Director Halpin?
Aye.
Director Souza?
Aye.
Director Saunders?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Director Wadley.
Aye. Okay, item E, approve extension to the agreement for PACE supply for supplies and materials. Steve, Daryl, or
Daryl will handle it.
Did you start with that one, please, just a presentation.
I think I'd mind on the bottom.
Okay. So I had asked a question on basically what we spent so far this year for fiscal year 18 to 19 and what the balance was, because I've been signing the checks and just going over just so we have a full overall view of it. So we've approved the initial one and we knew it was a second year to come up, so this is just part two. I just wanted to keep track of how we were doing.
Right. As outlined in the staff report. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So any public comment on this item? Entertain a motion to approve this extension with PACE supply.
I'll make a motion. We
okay. Thank you.
Second.
Who wants to take it? Stephanie, you got it? We get it?
Second was Souza?
Yeah. Correct.
Director Souza?
Okay.
That's right. You call
me Souza. You'll call when you're ready, please.
Director Halpin?
Aye.
Director Souza?
Aye.
Director Saunders?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Director Wadley?
Aye. Okay, thank you. Informational item 6A, board reports. I'll start down at the left. Director Souza, anything that you'd like to report? Okay. Director Saunders, anything you'd like to report?
Do you want those pictures?
Yeah, we can.
You want to turn everything back?
I'll turn them on.
Okay, thank you.
I just had a couple pictures.
So I just had the first pictures were from the United Water Conference that we attended.
It got out of adjustment.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, I turned that one.
I got it.
What do you mean, it looks perfect? That looks great.
There we go, how's that?
So this was the conference that myself, Director Wadley, Director Souza, and the General Manager Huffman was at. And this is at the Mumford Bar Trail, and it shows the watershed for the American River, and this was after the fire in 2013, so this is about how much has recovered since then. And if we could show the next slide, one of the things that was of importance is this was the topsoil, and you can see it's never come back, so what that does is it impacts the watershed's ability to hold water and to a lot of stuff has washed into the river itself and has been impacted significantly on the quality of the water and turbidity at the time of it. And it also will, now when it rains heavily, we don't retain that much snow, so a lot of it goes down right into the stream, increases our chance of flooding. And I don't know if the other directors that were there had anything they wanted to add of them. Impact when they were at this one.
We talked about it before, so.
Right, that was all I had to show for this.
Now I got it this time.
It's going to come back on, though, for mine.
So then
I'm
right.
Well, I still can't see that. At least I have my eye open now.
So I also toured the ALT plant with George, and that was probably a week before we had our first drop of water released. Water released out to public. So I was at the Auburn Lake Trails new plant, and I took a tour of it, and things were going well there, and we were probably on the way to start getting water out, and now we're producing water from it, so it's looking good. Hopefully we'll be able to cut the umbilical cord and move forward. The California State's Water Conservation Legislation Work Group has started, and they've taken stakeholders from the different areas around California to be in several work groups, and I'm going to be in the Wholesale Water Loss Work Group. That first meeting is going to be August 20th, so if anyone has any additional information or questions they want me to send to the state, just send it to my email and I'll bring it forward at the meeting. And just to remind, the sexual harassment training for us board members, that is had to be done for the first 6 months after taking office and every 2 years afterwards. And once again, our insurer loss risk mitigation agent, Aqua GPIA, advised that as a board, we review those agencies' policy annually. So I know that Steve has that coming up before the year is out. So just a reminder on those if any director hasn't met those appointments. That's all I have.
Great. Thank you. Director Halpin, anything you want to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Director Garcia?
Just a couple. We have a town hall meeting that is planned and coming up at the Cool Hall on Saturday, September 21st. And Steve, for that, can I ask you to email me the answers to the two previous town hall meetings so that we can present them at that town hall?
Okay.
I attended yesterday the Cannabis Ad Hoc Committee meeting over at the County Board of Supervisors Chambers, where this group has gotten together and is progressing along with establishing policies and rules for the measures M that have passed, that the voters in El Dorado County passed through the voting that was done last voting season. They are at the point where they are setting rates, everything from cultivation to transfers and transportation to retail to distributors, all the way down to even laboratories that do the testing for them. And this is something that I'm just keeping my finger on the pulse of this group, because as they begin to set these rates, there will be future discussions on how those rates that are set provide tax money coming in, that the water district may have some rights to or may be obligated to hopefully put in to get, receive some of those tax monies. So that would be another source of revenue. And they have a long way to go. This group is taken more than a year even to get to this point. But they are trying to speed things up fast now because once the rates are set, they can begin taking pre-applications. And it was standing room only. So we have a lot of businesses that want to come in at the different levels, whatever those levels may be, that they choose to do business with. So it could be a pretty good revenue source in the near future.
I have a question on that. My understanding is that that money went to the county.
It goes into the general fund, which means we might have access to some of it.
How? By the county supervisor talking about allocating money to water districts to address this?
It could be happening, and it could be way down the road. If it's taken them this long to even get to rates, it's going to be 2-3 years down the line before county board of supervisors even gets that on their agenda item. But it's another source of revenue we're watching. So, yeah, it could happen, Dave, but it's going to be a long way off. Last thing I just have is I'm going to be attending the El Dorado County Water Agency meeting tomorrow. I'll report back on if there's anything that they may be doing. I'm interested to see what they're doing with their grant group, to see what kind of grants they may be working on. Final thing I have is that I'll be attending the Government Finance Officers Association 2 days training in Sacramento coming up September 16th and 17th. And I think, Dean, you're doing some of those, too?
Yeah, I'll be there for 2, maybe 3 days.
And that's all I have.
Okay. A couple items just for me. I attended a media training event. Part of my role is currently the board president, be a spokesperson for the district. So any reason I'm able having to interact with media for something, I thought it might be appropriate to give them more media training, something I haven't done before. So I did a half-day training on that a couple weeks back. And then last week I did a financial management training as well, just kind of a refresher on budgets and audits and investments and et cetera. So trying to do that, keep fresh on those skills, and obviously it's